This is Due By Friday, a weekly challenge podcast by Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, watch the film adaptation of Les Mis. Merlin's on time!
Oh my god, you guys, I'm so sorry. I got here as quick as I could. I apologize.
I'm back. I burnt out very hard on politics working on the Clinton campaign, and I was like, I need to take a break and not take on any new projects and get out of politics for a little bit and like regain some worldview and like, you know, attend to my company and do all of the responsible life things, you know, like figure out how to program my to-do app to like remind me to like change the air filters in my HVAC system, which is like one of the long-standing problems in my life. And instead of doing that, I jumped immediately back into politics, and I'm so tired. Oh, I've been pulling all-nighters, like working on this stuff that I can't talk about, and I'm so stressed out and tired. Why do I do this? I don't know. Because I can't not do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's why you hire people like me to stay up and stress about the studio all night, and then you can stress out about other things that are more important.
Yeah, I'm not the studio redesign. We're Alex and I are doing a little studio redesign project. I mean, you know, I feel like it, listen, you know, my big goal is I just want to beat the Daily Show in terms of being America's number one anti-Semitism podcast.
Yeah, amen.
And I think we're clearly America's number two anti-Semitism podcast.
I think we're I've never listened to it, but I assume that we're a better show. I think we're definitely I have to assume that we're more anti-Semitic. That more creative goes, with it anyway.
That goes without saying. I mean, that's obvious. That's obvious. I think we all agree on that. But I just want, you know, it's all about those metrics, and I just want to beat them. And to me, if we just spend $50,000 on new recording equipment, we will get to where we need to go. Because as everyone knows, what drives the podcast audience is how expensive of a microphone you're using. That's why people ask me, ever I go, they say, Max, how do you make such a successful, enjoyable podcast to listen to? And I say, well, buddy, let's start with your DAC. What kind of DAC are you using? You got power headphones?
A lot of people don't even know about the DAC, Max, and they got the wrong kind of windscreen. They're still using analog cabling. Sometimes they're recording on very small screens. There's all kinds of things that they're not putting the quality. They're not putting the time into it. And people care about this. They sweat this. They want people to read essays over a music bed, and that's going to take at least $50,000.
I mean, obviously, when you're thinking about starting a podcast, the first choice is you record in Logic or Pro Tools, and that's going to guide a lot of what I like to call the stack.
The stack and the deck. I think you do it. I think you do it like Alex said. I think you do it because you have to do it. It's for some people, it's a passing anger fancy. But for you, I think you feel something deeply here where it's difficult for you not to do it. And I think that's it's probably problematic in a lot of ways in your life. But like, that's who you are. And if you embrace that in a way that doesn't make you crazy, you'll grow.
You know, if it's the other thing is, you know, working in politics, it's very romantic in the sense that you can, it's something, it's the rare thing in life that you can fully give yourself up to. And as much as sort of you're able. And I have this like weird, you know, like, I don't know, like sort of, I guess like symbiotic relationship with it where like it causes all these problems in my life of like chaos and distressing my relationships and making me miserable. But then also it addresses those problems because it's this thing I can focus all of my anxiety and mental energy into rather than dealing with the like poor state of my relationships and, you know, clutter and all this kind of thing. So it's like the Homer Simpson thing.
Love like, and solution know. To all of life's problems.
Anyhow, digga follow up. Kombucha does make you shit yourself.
Okay, hang on. I want to hear all about this, but I want to get it out there. I have one piece of follow up. I am fucking balls deep in kombucha right now.
Okay, tell me what are the performance characteristics that you're experiencing from imbibing a lot of kombucha?
Well, I'll tell you, I enjoy the flavor of it. I'm not getting quite the Max Temkin energy boost I was hoping for. And I also haven't shat myself yet. So I may not be drinking enough.
Huh.
Or maybe I'm not drinking it fast enough.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes,
you
either.
A long time, first time. Are you shaking it to get the detritus into every sip?
Because that is an excellent, excellent question. Well, here's what I learned in my first day of kombucha, is you don't want to shake it too hard because rejoice, rejoice, It's a living beverage, which means that when you open it, it's going to fucking spray all over you. Now you're covered with jizz. So you got to be real careful. What I do is I turn it over like this, and I allow it to settle a little bit. In my hand, it's still in my hand. You can see it. I turn it back over, lid side up, and then I gently open it. I tried shaking it once, and it literally sprayed all over the room.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, so what I like is I like to get a little bit of that yeasty powder in a little bit in every sip. You know what they call that? They call that the mother.
Oh, that's like the original baller sourdough.
Yes, exactly.
That's the one that's got particles of Napoleon in it.
Yes, and dinosaurs drank that mother. But when you go to someone's house and they're brewing kombucha, I'm assuming this is a thing you've encountered. Like, I have friends who like brew kombucha at their house. Also, just to clarify, I'm just buying this from the store. Like, I'm not trying to give myself botulism here by like fermenting a bunch of fetid trash in my house.
You know, don't make your own ketchup, don't line your own brakes, and don't make your own fucking kombucha. What are you doing? That's like making your own penicillin. Like, there's a pretty serviceable version of that you can pick up at Walgreens. I call it the Walgreens test. Is there a version of this I could get at Walgreens that won't kill me? Yes or no?
Nice brand kombucha.
Nice. Wait, oh, so that's interesting. Do you yell it when you say it?
Oh, well,
it's got an exclamation point, Max, and it's trademark.
I always hear it in my head as nice.
Nice nuts.
Nice.
No, I voted party line. I want to hear about you shitting yourself. Because this calls for dun-da-da, man wipes.
So when you buy
your balls are going to be covered with kombucha shit.
Wait, so you're saying when you buy your dude wipes, your ball wipes, at the Walgreens. Now you've got a little bit of Alex Jones in your nice performance, and I've got a little bit more Borat going on. Nice.
I see what you're saying.
Nice. Yeah, and you're more like nice. You got to shake that powder up. You got to get that powder. It diffuses the energy. You get it in your whole body. It's living organisms.
Do you have any
masculine energy in every sip? An effervescent, vinegary sip of masculine energy. I'm gonna rip my shirt off. I'm so excited.
You're going to want to get that mother powder and really jam it into every conceivable cavity of your body. I'll be consulting for the president.
Now, when you go to someone's house and they're brewing, they have this vat, this sort of plastic vat of...
The mother vat.
Garbage, and there's what looks like a human foot in
you're
a trash
about the,
bag.
You talking about the dingus they put in?
That's the big, mother.
Oh, my God.
That's the mother. So it looks like... To me, it looks like a severed... It always looks to me like they're dissolving a body, like from Breaking Bad, and there's like a severed foot in a trash bag just bobbing up and down in this thing. And all it is
like
is like...
Or like you did some pathology slides of a very large squid?
Yes. It's a fungal colony.
Ugh. That's the mother. That's how you know it's working. I voted party line. What I did was, while we were on the air last time with our program, I started ordering from the Prime. I tried a variety of flavors, and what I've settled on, because I'm kind of new to this, I don't think I'm ready for multigreen yet. I got some multigreen, I haven't sucked it down yet. I've been voting on, I go Gingerade and the cranberry one, the Cran Ginger, I think it's called. Let me go get it. I'll get one right now. I'll pop one open.
Boy, that Gingerade is good.
It's really refreshing, and I like the mother funk.
Oh, give me some funk.
Give me some funk, says Max Temkin.
I believe, and I have a sort of powder-based ontology. I think that really in the end, the whole world is all powder.
Well, that's really what's so compelling about the powder world.
Thank you. That's big of you to bring up, Merlin. I mean, what was the Big Bang but really just a diffusion of powder throughout the world?
It took me a few times to get good at taking the little seal off. I seldom remember to honor the scores when it comes to removing a seal. And in this case, I'm going all in. Take that off, and then I do this. Okay, now turn it over once.
You got to honor the scores.
And you turn it over again, thusly, and oh, brother, here comes the powder. This one is Cosmic Cranberry. Oh, God, that's full of motherfucker.
Oh, God. Ah, oh.
Alex, have you been enjoying kombucha?
No.
That's not in your wheelhouse. No. That's not your powder.
No. If someone would like to pay me $200 to drink a full bottle of kombucha, great. No.
That would be the weirdest porn site ever. Like a cam girl, but for drinks.
You'd be surprised.
Hey, sweetie, come to Dubai. I've got kombucha.
sweetie. Here is the FedEx tracking number.
Moi, I've got the simple green.
Drink it on the camera, sweetie.
Hey, sweetie, slowly, it's a living beverage.
Slowly. That's drink when, it slow, sweetie.
When Zapier, the Saudi prince with the falcons, summons you to his skyscraper in Dubai, he's going to say, moi, sweetie, it's a living beverage.
Miss Cox, you have received another package from Lord Zapier.
So anyway, I want to hear about you shitting yourself, Max. So I feel like from seeing this on Twitter, this might be a known issue for kombucha, even if it's not deadly kombucha.
Well, in the software world, I think this is a case where they would say it's a feature, not a bug. Mm. So I'll tell you what happened was I started drinking the kombucha, and then I had been shitting myself for some time. And I, on Twitter, when after the podcast episode posted, someone replied to the Do By Friday or whatever, and they're like, oh, have you begun shitting yourself from drinking the kombucha? And I was like, it all makes sense now. Like, yes, that it makes a lot of sense, because I was wondering why I was shitting myself all the time. But, you know, I think here's the deal is, like, so I get prescribed antibiotics on a, I'll say, like, a couple times a year. Because for me, I have bad Jewish sinuses. It's just, you know, again, listen, I hate to bring the anti-Semitism into everything, but the gene, the quality of these genes, it's extremely poor. My sinuses are a disaster. These are not, you know, heritable traits that we want to be passing on, these compromised Jewish sinuses.
Sweet but Jesus, no.
I have many sinus issues. I get a sinus infection at the drop of a hat. Is that a saying?
Oh, you get the kind where you like blow your nose and like Oreo dust comes out?
Oh, for me, it's more of a like a Greek yogurt.
Okay. So do you take a probiotic to counteract that?
I have done that and I don't notice any difference. But
you got to take it for a while. What you do: you go to Walgreens, as you do, and you get yourself a box of something called Culturel. It's a little bit costly, but not too costly. It's about $1 a day. You take a Culturel every morning, and you're gonna shit like a Viking. It's amazing. It's just like a pleasurable morning kielbasa every single day.
I will try to get on the. I've tried it before. I'm willing to try the probiotic drink. But I take these antibiotics somewhat regularly. I know how bad they are for you. I'm like well familiar with the antibiotics. Yeah, they're bad. You should take them if you're prescribed.
You're taking all these things to the gym. Basically, you're giving all your bad sinuses a workout.
Yeah, but they wreak havoc on your gut, on your microbiome. That's where you want, you got to feed that mother down there.
You got to give a mother to the fauna. The fauna it's all about the fauna. You don't want to get rid of the fauna, far from it. You want the fauna to be healthy because they live in your gut and they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah. So I take the antibiotics and then, you know, I walk around and I feel like fatigued and I'm like get mad at people my relationships are all deteriorating and my life is a mess. And I'm like, rather than think about any of my behaviors and how I might be complicit in any of that, I'm like, ooh, I should eat some fermented foods because I think that that could more deeply address the problem.
Fuck you. I'm eating kimchi.
But here's the thing is that you can buy it.
Oh, see, it helps if you can buy it.
That's what I want. I need something that is nice.
Nice. You need some productization of the things that'll make you less terrible as a Jew.
Right.
That's the problem. Is a lot of times they haven't figured out how to productize it.
That's exactly right. And it's like, oh well, I should be nicer to everyone around me and be more considerate and spend more time with people where I'm like not on my phone or asking them to do things for me. And that's a lot of work. I mean, you can't really buy that. But kombucha, you just have Amazon bring it, so it's very appealing.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it for a while. I like it. I like it in the morning. In the morning now I have three beverages. I'm a multi-beverage man. Always have been. Never look back. So I'll have me a coffee. I'll have me a fizzy water. And I'll have me a kombucha.
Uh-huh.
And I sit there and I write in my notebook and I look at my iPad and I drink lots of beverages. And I'm enjoying it quite a lot.
How many times do you use the bathroom a day, would you say, Merlin?
Which one? Number one, number two?
Let's say both.
Okay. Number two, I'm a solid 1.5.
Oh.
I'm maybe a 1.6. I got tight grouping and a tiny window in the morning. That's when it's going to happen unless something's gone horribly wrong because of reasons. I'm a 1.6, man. And then as far as number one, you know, not as given how much I take in, I think my liver is probably having some problems. I'd like to go more than I do. I'm going to say 4.8 times a day. It's kind of weird. You realize that we really are just kind of like animated meat bags when you think about, like, as a consequence of having certain great-great-grandparents, you're more likely to have a certain kind of health problem, whether that's, you know, breast cancer or, you know.
Or a love of gold coins.
Geld, they call it. Jazz break.
I got some follow-up here. What'd you have, Alex? Go ahead.
I wanted to ask Merlin about his to-do list, but, you know, because it's almost like you're turning into Merlin Mann again. It's very exciting. Oh, and I wore the stupid, the Pavlok thing, like, all week, and I kind of like it.
What did you set it? Okay, well, all right. Dig it. What did you set it to? How have you programmed your Pavlok?
I did it so it shocked me when I tweeted, as well as the hand raising thing, so that I didn't mess up my hair during the day. I'm not wearing it today, so I'm just a mess. But yeah, it was, I liked it. However, you know how you get like phantom phone buzzes in your pocket sometimes? Now I'm just kind of getting like phantom shocks in my right wrist. So we'll see how long before those go away. Yeah, that's all I have.
Oh, my God. I'm actually going to try it again. There's a habit I want to stop.
Well, this is a challenge, goddamn gold mine. Just save it for the challenge, for the podcast. For Christ's sakes, people.
You see, we got to put every nickel on the screen. If we're gonna beat the other Jew-hating podcast, we're going to have to really focus our efforts. We're going to have to really quadruple down, as they like to say in blackjack. We're going to have to really focus our efforts, put it all into the podcast, maybe start going to twice or three times a week.
I have some a big anti-Semitism follow-up. So okay. Where to even start with the anti-Semitism news this week? It's been a huge week in our number one topic. But this was from this morning. So Trump yesterday went to the African American History exhibit or a museum rather, and there was a report out this morning who had this Daniel Dale, who is a correspondent for the Toronto Star. Here we go. So this is a statement from Alveda King, who went to the slavery exhibit at the African American History Museum with Donald Trump yesterday. As she says, the first came when his gaze fell on a stone auction block from Hagerstown, Maryland, on which slaves would stand before being sold. King, part of a small delegation to tour the new Smithsonian with the president, overheard Trump say, "Boy, that is just not good. That is not good." Later, they came upon a set of shackles that were used to restrain children. "That is really bad," King quoted the president as saying. "That is really bad." And you know what it reminds me of is, have you guys ever been to Medieval Times Dinner and Tournament?
I have not, no.
So they have, at Medieval Times Dinner and Tournament, one of the awesome things they have in the lobby is a sort of mini museum of medieval torture devices. And you can look
bon
at
appetite.
Like the giant, it's like the cranks that pull people's like limbs apart and the cage that goes on their head with the rats. And there's like a huge screw that they'll just screw into a man's anus one turn a day. And so it's these devices are, I mean, I think they're probably apocryphal if I had to guess. Like, I don't know if they were ever actually used, but you know, you go in there and you're 12 years old and you look at them and you're just fascinated. You just are so titillated by these devices. They're all sort of, you know, sadomasochistic and sort of weird, dark, sort of some sort of weird psychosexual thing happening in this exhibit. And you're going through this exhibit and you're just looking at them and you're going, "Boy, that is really bad. That's really bad. That is just not good." That is how I imagine Trump going through looking at the children slavery exhibit, just looking at it and rubbing his hands together and going, "Boy, that is really bad. That is just so bad.
What a disaster."
Hope they don't screw my anus.
Oh, do you think they ever turn it twice a day? Ooh, that's not good. Oh, God. It is. There's something kind of, even if you're not overtly titillated by stuff like that, there is still something pornographic, voyeuristic about that. Like, you know, you ever go down the rabbit hole of torture on Wikipedia?
Oh, boy, have I. Do you know the Chinese water torture?
I know death by a thousand cuts. I know them all.
Oof.
I mean, when you really read it about it, you're like, oh, this is horrible.
It's just awful.
Do you think if you were a serial killer, would torture somebody or just get it over with?
That's a really good question.
Alex, that boy, because I don't want to take us off the topic, but this is a whole week.
That's a really good question.
Can I ask you guys a question? Do you ever go on like serial killer Wikipedia and just get
literally every day?
Yeah. I do all of my God, this is the new podcast.
Constantly.
Okay. I go on serial killer Twitter and I wind up after an hour, I wind up rooting for the serial killers and I wind up like evaluating their plans from a tactical point of view where they like they start their rampage.
How do you not admire Ted Bundy?
Oh my God, the master of his craft. But
he's amazing.
Sometimes I get into the lesser serial killers and it's, you know, this is just a guy who went on a rampage on the campus and it's like, it makes no sense. It's like, dude, you got to start it with the cheerleaders because they're who wronged you. It's like, if you're not taking out 8-9 cheerleaders before the rampage even hits its peak, it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. John Wayne Gacy, he just wanted a little bit of help around the house. Pretty soon he's reading you Bible verses.
I'm a big fan of the Murder Castle by the hotel constructed by H.H. Holmes here in Chicago. It was a work of art.
Boy, the building code must have been really different back then because I couldn't have done any of that shit in my house. The inspector was up my ass. Talk about turning the screw every day.
That's
Jesus.
Right. Once a day. Not good.
You'd come in and be like, the panels on this deck are too close to the property line. You can't have wood there. Oh, thank you.
Hey, Sid. Hey, Marty. Is it time? Yep. One turn. All right, buddy. See you tomorrow. You want anything special for breakfast? I'm good. Very bad. Very bad. Oh, the depth of feelings. He's probably just masking how deeply he's feeling that moment. Really, really turning it over in his mind. 400 years of awfulness visited upon an entire race of people, and he's just thinking about, I wonder if they'll have meatloaf today.
Chris Christie, eat some of this meatloaf. So Trump still, by the way, has not. The reason I brought this whole thing up is this was actually like a fairly big deal for him to go to the African American History Museum. The fucking guy still hasn't gone to the Holocaust Museum, and the White House keeps defending this comment that where they won't acknowledge that Jewish people suffer, like specifically mention Jewish people in Holocaust Remembrance Day, and their line that they keep saying, which is fucking awesome. It's so cool how it's like, at least they're like fully transparent about it. Like I kind of admire the balls on them to just come out and say it. And they're like, where they're just like, yeah, well, they're like a lot of people suffered in the Holocaust, so we're trying to be inclusive of all the groups. That's so like, at least I like that they're just brazen about it. Like, it's kind of comforting in a way.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, cool. Now we know where we all are.
They're kind of all lives mattering.
Right.
Yeah. Very bad.
I think Trump think I would put $100 on Trump goes to the Holocaust Museum and he gets to that. Have you guys ever been to the Holocaust Museum in D.C.?
No.
Oh, boy, is that an afternoon. So you get to the Dr. Mangala section where they build the walls so children can't see. It's like you have to stand over the wall so children can't see it. I mean, that's some good shit. And I could just see him peering over that and just being hypnotized by it, and he's under his breath, he goes, nice. Because what would happen if you put people into ice water and then hot water? What would happen? Who hasn't wondered that? So anyway, Merlin, you had a to-do app that you were using?
Yeah, so page two. I've been just noodling with Todoist because they talked about it on the podcast Cortex, and I was looking at it. And I hadn't looked at it in just about 10 years, and I think it's very interesting. It's got some things that I kind of like about it. It feels like even when you're using the app on a Mac, I think the Mac app is essentially a web view. Like, there's all kinds of things about it, really. It just feels like you're butt deep in Ajax. So, like, I mean, there's all kinds of things I'm used to with OmniFocus that this doesn't do that's a little bit maddening. But I feel like it's somewhere between OmniFocus, TaskPaper, and Fantastical, right? Like, I really like the fact that it has the intelligent, you know, natural language stuff. I like that it kind of, because it doesn't have affordances to do too much fiddly stuff, it kind of encourages you to be really lean about what you put in there, and then focuses very heavily on, like, okay, so when do you have to do this? Do you have to do this today? No. So it's mostly an experiment, but I'm also very interested in the idea of these templates you can get. We can go and get, like, project templates people have made to go in and do stuff. So I'm just playing with it, but I like it. Oh, also, it works with Lady in a Tube.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I talk to her so much more now. She's like my best friend who is also a slave in a small machine. It's great.
Sad. Are you using Todoist, Max?
Now, well, so here's the thing is, as you guys know, I think we've talked about on the podcast, I'm all in on the OmniFocus system. I have, like, an OmniFocus-based lifestyle, and it's kind of the only way that I can hold my brain together and not, you know, feel like I'm my life is, like, spinning out of control every day. But for anyone who's open OmniFocus, you're looking at that interface, and I think a lot of people get into OmniFocus, and they're like, well, this is pretty good, but I wish there was a lot more options and stuff to do in here, because the one thing that OmniFocus doesn't have is a lot of text fields and buttons and options for customization. You know, you're like, well, I really want a lot of options in terms of how I structure my to-do items and then view them. And if you're telling me
what
that
if,
there's...
What if I just want to see completed flagged items from October of 2007?
Yeah. Well,
is there any way I could possibly do that?
Who doesn't need that all the time? And if you're telling me that there's a program out there where I could actually spend more time customizing it and it gives me even more flexibility in terms of seeing my to-do lists, I mean, I'm on board, because I don't so much as I want to do things as customize my to-do list and change, like, the icons and categorize them in different ways in lieu of doing the work. Because, like, a lot
Max,
of times I find...
it's got themes.
Oh, that's what I'm there for. Because a lot of times I find it's like, ooh, like, I've got this thing coming up and I really have to do it and it's urgent and it's hard work and I'm a little insecure about it and I just don't want to do it. And I'm just staring at my screen and I'm like, you know, if I just changed the metadata on this task, mm-hmm. I wouldn't actually see it. I could move it to, like, a different project or something. So yeah. That's a little productivity hack to provide to our listeners.
Well, you're good. You are good.
And because, you know, if it's not there, you don't have to do it. And I'm interested. If you're telling me there's an app with more ways to do this and it makes it even harder to figure out what I'm supposed to do every day and I can spend more time, you know, dickering around with it, I mean, I'm on board.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. More time to spend on serial killers and torture devices.
Right.
Not good. Yeah. So anyway, I'm playing with that, and that may factor into a challenge this week potentially. But yeah, we'll see. I mentioned this on another program yesterday, but I just feel like, you know, like, if I really think about what I have to do, what I want to do with an app like this, functionally, it's a place where I want to put stuff and forget it. A lot like reminders, for example. I want just a lightly structured way to put stuff and not think about it till I need to think about it, and I am trying to avoid all of the other things that would encourage me to fiddle. I mean, I don't really do anything. My job is really simple. I mean, I do the same things, but I do them, you know, repetitively. Like, I've got to go do these show notes. I've got to go do that thing. I've got to go edit this thing. It's not difficult. It's not complicated. But in order to, like, block out a week in a way that's sensible and make good decisions and not, you know, be running around like a chicken with my head cut off every day, I just like to, you know, plan that stuff out, know what I need to do, and make sure we don't run out of milk, like all that dumb stuff. And that I just need enough of an infrastructure to help me remember that stuff and as a bulwark against insanity.
That's why you put your template in TaskPaper and export it as Markdown and goes into Todoist. It's great.
Oh, and now I wish Gray would give out his forgotten towel templates.
Can we? I wonder. I don't know if I'm good enough friends, internet friends. With
I don't
Frank.
Think. I don't think he'd do it. He doesn't like people.
Yeah.
But don't you kind of want
no,
those?
No, no, no. I would ask Frank, not CGP Gray. Good lord.
Oh, I see. You do it on the back channel. I lost my Apple Pencil. I lost both my Apple Pencils, and I can't find them because now I really want to go play with GoodNotes. Do you know about GoodNotes, Max?
I mean, is that like a note that's of high quality?
Do you use your iPad at all?
I watched a Les Mis on it.
No,
I should
no,
say
not.
I don't want to say that I watched Les Mis so much as I fell asleep to it multiple times over this week until they get to a big musical number, because it's a very dynamic volume on that, and then I'm drifting off to slumberland, and then all of a sudden everyone starts stomping on the floor and singing about their, stealing the rent from people or some nonsense.
Sometimes they talk a little, sometimes they sing a little. We really should get going. You must pack your things. So anyway,
in terms of a good note, I've got one here that just says office signs, the pee stuff is probably true.
Huh.
Are you still using Simple Note?
No, I'm on Bear.
Oh, thank God.
I'm a big Bear boy.
Good, good.
Big Bear boy.
It's a good thing that doesn't have any other meanings.
Not good.
I think I'd be more of an otter. No, wait, is that it?
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're not this, quite like hairy enough to be a bear. No, an otter is like the cute little gay bears. Typically an otter will take on a bear as their daddy.
Now I've heard that the culture is now that people just expect a bear to be a muscle bear. Is that, would you say that that's accurate?
You know what? I'm not sure.
I think of a bear as more like a Hagrid kind of guy. Like not necessarily super fit. It's going to be kind of, he might be a little thick in the middle. That's kind of a performance characteristic of a bear. Don't you think?
I believe there is there's subsets of bears, obviously. There's chocolate bears, I wonder what that is.
You've got your Jewish bears that are primarily motivated by their love of honey.
Got to pick a bucket or two.
That was the one that woke me up. I'm going to have nightmares about that song because I'd be falling asleep during a boring part and then all of a sudden Bellatrix Lestrange and fucking Borat come on the screen and they start stomping around talking about their selling their children or whatever.
Yeah, and Bora.
Nice.
Digga, 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 digga. Challenge.
The challenge this week was my week, and I challenged Max and Merlin to watch the 2012 film adaptation of Les Mis, which is based on the musical, which is based on the book by Victor Hugo.
Before we get into this, Alex, so here's what let me just start. Can I just throw you a couple of questions? Because I want to get some information out of you about this.
Okay.
So here's my understanding from like Googling and talking to Veronica about this, who Veronica, assistant stage managed a production of Les Mis when we were in high school. And I saw it, but I did not understand anything that was happening or like it. So here's my question. So the musical is quite popular, but the movie came out and was not liked. I mean, nobody liked the movie.
A lot of moms and families liked it. It has like a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's well known for being not liked by both film critics and theater nerds.
Okay. Now, tell me about your sort of history with what does the musical mean to you? What does the movie mean to you?
I really don't like the movie. I just was mad about the Pavlok, so I wanted to see if you could get through it. and I was considering making you watch Mamma Mia, but that's a much shorter movie, and it would be far less painful.
Yeah, but you guys both like the musical.
I love the musical.
Tell me about what you like about it. I'm just sort of trying to get my head around this.
It's by no means my favorite musical. It's very much based on sort of like nostalgia and the high school theater kid in me. And I don't know, when you don't have valid emotions as a teenager and you just are upset about poverty in the world, and you want to get the guy because you're very confused. It's just a feel good musical. I know that like it feels like a strange thing to say about Les Mis, but if you've read the book, this ends.
Have you read the book?
Yeah. Wow. I have not read it in French. That would be no.
But you did. Isn't it a pretty big book?
Yeah. So is The Hunchback of Notre Dame. That sure is something. I did my high school sophomore thesis on Victor Hugo, who is kind of that man really wanted to fuck a goat. Have you read any Victor Hugo? Hugo Victor. What's his name? Any of his works, Merlin?
God, I can't think of. Let me go look. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I'm looking on his page here.
He was a very sad, sad man.
Really? Okay.
But it was one of those things that, like, it was a musical that was easy to see at the time. Like, there were a lot of high school and college productions of it. There was, when the 25th anniversary happened, there was this whole big concert that was really cool and fun. The company came to Chicago a few times. So I have no rational reasons for liking it. I have many rational reasons for disliking many, many portions of both the musical and the film. But I don't know. Merlin put it really well when he said it's like the Doctor Who-iest of musicals.
Yeah. I mentioned this to you guys in text, but my background with this is so strange, and I'm feeling like it's emblematic of how screwed up and pointillist much of my personal fandom has become in the past, you know, 15, 20 years. Where, like, I think I told you, I got this on a mixtape from a friend of mine when I was in college. I'd heard maybe a couple songs from it randomly, and I was like, ugh. This is not as good as The Confrontation, because, you know, it's weird. It's like opera. And that was, you know, not my jam in the 90s. I feel like I saw the movie streaming. I might have even bought it on iTunes, but it did not stick with me. And here's the crazy part. And I know how much Max loves this. The carpool karaoke with Lin-Manuel Miranda and a bunch of other Broadway people that James Corden did, I guess, what, early last year, probably? Is that about right?
It was to promote the Grant, or I'm sorry, the Tonys. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's at a time when our whole household, especially my daughter and I, were really into Hamilton and listening to it a lot. We're like, oh my God, Lin-Manuel Miranda's on Carpool Karaoke. We saw that. We watched it many, many, many times because he's such a delight. We watched it over and over and over, and I was like, oh God! At one point they sing One Day More in the car. And I was like, wow, this song, I must have heard this, but I really like it. I'm very intrigued by what they're doing and what they're acting out. Clearly, these two are a couple, and this is a rejected woman. And like, what is that? I ended up going and watching videos on YouTube from the movie, particularly One Day More, and I Dreamed a Dream. Watched the movie again. Started listening to the soundtrack. My daughter started really getting into it. My daughter can basically throw down The Confrontation, like, on demand. Oh, it's pretty God. Crazy. And we do it together, and it's totally gay. So I just got really into it. I started watching the movie again, soundtrack. And then I fall down the YouTube rabbit hole of all the different performances. Like, you can find, like, behind-the-scenes interviews when it was on Broadway that somebody's, like, shot from VHS. You can find, obviously, the 10th anniversary, the 25th anniversary, all these different versions. You can go listen to it in French on iTunes, the original version. So anyway, it's completely fractured. It doesn't make a lick of sense. And I don't know. I don't want to monopolize this, but I think it's very emblematic of the way I approach things today, that I could become so interested in elements of this thing without having any background of any kind with it. We're again, like Doctor Who, I know so much about certain parts of this and so extremely little about others. It must be completely vexing to super fans and newbies alike, much like this movie was. So I think there's a pattern here. No, to answer your question, I saw La Boheme when I was in high school. Like an actual operatic staging. Well, as much as Tampa does something like that. An operatic staging, that's not nice. An operatic staging of La Boheme. I have not been to very many live professional musicals.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I actually saw this in the theater and enjoyed it way more because the guy who directed this, Tom Hooper, also did The King's Speech, most known for beating Social Network as the best picture at the Academy Awards. And it was just so grandiose, and it was completely different from anything
I've
ever done.
Alex, it's a story. The King's Speech is a great film. It's a story that everybody can relate to. which is when there's a stuttering inbred king and it's hard for him to talk about the war.
Not good.
I really enjoy the Netflix series The Crown. It's like White Tears the series. I really, really like it.
But this one's got Mr. Darcy in it. Ladies love
like
Mr. Darcy.
He's like chasing an elephant. What is happening in that show? All right. Okay. Social Network should have won. Anyway.
But, like, okay, so you've seen... the thing is, as somebody who has not seen it in a theater, I mean, are there any widely available sources of what an actual staging of the musical play looks like as opposed to a concert performance in costume? I mean, let me ask the dumbest question in the world. When you go and see, or when if you went in 1985 or whatever, you went to see Les Mis on stage, if you saw it in the West End or you saw it in Broadway, are they acting out a play as a play or are they really just standing at microphones?
Oh, no, they're acting out a play. I mean, it is much... it's obviously
that's the only thing that made sense. But I are there any versions of that available, like full stagings of it?
Maybe there is not one you can purchase.
Have you guys ever had this happen to you? Because this happens to me all the time. Is when I'm going about my business and you know, there's like a, for whatever reason, I have to lift up a car. Like let's just say there's a guy trapped under it or a child in his bicycle, and I have to lift
up
the car.
You have to do it.
And then, because I lifted up the car, the police recognized me based on my tremendous strength.
They recognize you. They're pretty sure they recognize you.
Yeah, they're like...
they don't just instantly
like,
arrest
wow,
you.
They're like, not a lot of people can lift a whole car up. That must be Max. And, of course, the audience knows I'm Max because as soon as I walk into the room, I go, "Hello, my name is Max. I host the podcast."
Okay, now what about this? I mean, you guys, you know, we're all doing pretty good right now. You pay your bills. But have you ever run into a situation where you're a little short on money? Now, what do you guys sell when you're short on money?
Well,
obviously your hair. But like, let's say you've run out of hair. What are you going to start selling? You know?
Now, are you taking for granted in this hypothetical that I do not own some sort of boarding home with an orphan that's just available for cash?
All I know, I don't know who's buying the teeth, but I know there's an interest out there in you.
Why though? I don't understand who's buying.
Who buys you?
What's the deal with these teeth? Who's out there buying these teeth? I don't get it. What are people doing with all these teeth out there?
Do you want a serious an answer? That was a thing that the royalty, like, you know, even the fanciest of the fancy did not have great toothbrushes, so they lose their teeth. And, you know,
when you get a new one, you just pop it in there?
Yeah, you get a prostitute who's young and you take her teeth.
Well, you want young teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's one thing we can learn from Peter Thiel, I mean, we try to learn a lot from Peter Thiel on this podcast about how to run a business and, you know, invest in things.
You don't want old teeth.
Now, you get the youthful teeth. I mean, that keeps you young.
Oh, it's like going to Costco getting new tires. You just go have them rip some teeth out of a hooker's head. You put that in, and then maybe what? You get the blood of a Cosette?
I'm sorry, Alex. I did not want to interrupt that story because I was very – you sort of trailed off. You sort of you sort of yada-yada'd that story, but what happens with the teeth? So the rich people lose their teeth, they buy a hooker's tooth, and then...
They just put them in their mouth. I don't know.
Just like, now you got it?
With, how did Washington do it?
He had ivory. So wrong,
no, they
so
were,
right,
he had,
this will improve your bite.
Well, he had slave teeth.
Oh, slave teeth. He had, Sally Hemings' teeth.
No, yeah. He did. He had. You could see his dentures at the Smithsonian. They were like this contraption made out of slaves' teeth.
Oh, did you know Sally Hemings was 14? Not good.
Boy, that's really bad. I'm sorry. I don't want to Milo Yiannopoulos myself here. You know what I mean? It's very important to me that I keep my position at Breitbart.
Is that sort of euphemism?
Well, I just want to say it's like the anti-Semitism podcast. It's going really well, and I don't want to screw it up, you know, because if I say something too controversial, I'll have to resign to protect the integrity of the good work that you guys are doing on this show. You know, just getting our anti-Semitic message out to the world.
Yeah. Well, Max just went a little bit too far, so we had to ask for his resignation.
He started wearing pearls. Like, no more.
I mean, but what is the age of consent? It's just a number.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a whole classical tradition of this. You got, you know, you got Socrates and the priests and Skype videos.
There is a long,
rich tradition,
intellectual tradition of Socratic boy fucking, and it's part of our Western civilization.
Well, and it's a little bit normative to not realize that's just part of their culture.
I mean,
boo for normative, boo for normative.
Yeah, like who are we to impose our values on ancient Athenian boy fuckers?
That's probably how Alex got started. You get some kind of Wonder Woman character that comes in.
Yeah.
Right? You know, come in, you get a, you get an Indigo Girls record, you do some dancing.
It is with a heavy heart that I must announce my resignation from the Dubai Friday podcast. My comments crossed a line, and my continued participation in the podcast will only serve as a distraction to the excellent anti-Semitic work that Merlin and Alex are doing. I want to apologize to all my fans and listeners.
Very bold, very brave statement. Thank you, Max. You took a bullet for us.
I have really complicated feelings about this movie, and I don't even
sing it, sister.
I do not even want to go so far as to say that I think it's good or bad. I just found it really interesting and extremely. I think about it a lot, but I also fell asleep multiple times while I was watching it. And I at one point
that's a good definition of mixed.
And also at one point I was the first time on my first attempt at viewing this thing, I got to the scene where Anne Hathaway had finished her sort of. Snot singing, and she had the teeth pulled, and I looked at the I hit the little touch button on the Apple TV to be like, oh Christ, we must be almost done with this movie, and we were like 15 minutes into a 2.5 hour movie, and I was like, I have been sitting here for 8 hours watching this, like how is this possible?
Yeah, like they just pulled a Janet Leigh on you. You figure she's gonna be. They did a Psycho. They ran a Psycho on you because you figure, it's L.A. Kalin's girlfriend. Obviously, she's gonna be the banner star of this that we're gonna see through the whole movie. Mm-mm. She's done by the first reel.
But it just also just everything has just moved so goddamn slow in this movie. Like it's such a weird.
Yeah,
piece of...
it moves too slow and it moves too fast. Like so much of the whole basis of the second act comes out of this flaming romance. Between Newt Scamander and the blonde bird lady, and that's supposed to be this huge romance that's going to drive all the tension, and Eponine steals the note, you know what I'm saying? And it's like you go and take a leak and come back and you miss the romance. You're like, what was that? They saw each other across the street and that what?
Yeah,
is that? Am I reading that wrong, Alex?
So this... in the stage production, it's very it totally makes sense because it's a musical, it's a play, like and they're basically the way it like the blocking works is they're basically there's this commotion in the street where the guy who plays Borat and his wife are fighting with Jean Valjean. And
his wife.
and they're basically singing to each other. And you're like, okay, I see what's happening. Now let's go to the revolution. And it moves along fairly quickly. But this, they felt they needed to stage it in a realistic way. And that's the whole problem with this movie. They like, yes, this is how we would get a ship in. So this is what the slaves will do. And the whole thing...
This was one of the central tensions that I think is interesting about it. So, like, I'm interested in this story, and I think it's a sort of a successful, materialist piece of art, dialectical materialist piece of art. Like, I think the entire movie can really correctly be read as, a kind of a Marxist piece, right? Like, so it's looking at the role of class and identity and how you can never escape your class, and Jean Valjean he's constantly fleeing his identity and his past as a low-class person. And Javert is – his entire identity is wrapped up in the class system, and he can't let go of it. And when he finally sees the facade of it, he has nothing left to live for and throws himself into the river. And, you know, also, I think the whole Anne Hathaway story is also a really nice example of it follows – that she has no options, and when Javert arrives, he immediately believes the guy who attacked her. Like, there's so many little pieces and parts before you even get to the stupid barricade thing and the 38 failed I think it was the 38 revolution. I don't know my French history super well.
All I know is it is not the French Revolution, and everyone gets mad because
no,
it's
there's like six French Revolutions. Exactly, this is one
it's not the important one.
The
basically.
only historically interesting thing about this revolution at all is that it was put in Les Mis, and a bunch of students died in the streets.
Yeah.
And I think they killed more French officers than were killed of them, but I could be wrong about that. I could be thinking of something else. Anyway, sorry, neither here nor there. But so I think it's interesting that it's this sort of like, it's a Marxist piece of art, and that's cool. That's interesting. But you know, one of the other things is like it functions almost completely without irony. Like your everything. I mean, this is like possibly what I don't like about musicals in general is like
everything's serious business.
It's so fucking serious. And these are not. You know, the thing about Marxism is irony or earnestness, whichever angle you go. You need to access the fundamental humanity of the people that it affects. And I feel that this movie pushed everyone, and the story pushes everyone to a point of character. And when you have Anne Hathaway and she's just snots running out of her nose and she's sobbing and belting out this song and it's just, and her hair is all cut off and it's just like, it's so much. I mean, this is not how real people act. It's an inhuman performance. And to me, I understand the attempt of earnestness. Like, the story is so earnest, the motivations of the characters, I mean, they literally sing them out loud to you. And then it's shot in a way to dismantle any sort of ironic reading of the film, which is why I think people react so viscerally to it. You know, the audience, like, it got such a reaction of people fucking hate it. It makes you uncomfortable. The camera is right up in these fucking people's faces. There's nothing in the frame.
Just real quickly, my big thing with this is I feel like this is that kind of movie, as I said to y'all in text, like Watchmen, this is the kind of movie that is almost destined to be disappointing because there's no way that you could satisfy very opinionated super fans and make something that's going to make sense to people who don't know anything about it. But also what you, and I don't want to criticize it because I actually do love this movie. It's kind of a terrible movie that I really, really love. So just want to get that out of the way. But you're nailing it right there, because when you watch this movie, especially with like Marius, and I think Eddie Redmayne does a really nice job with this. I think his singing is great. His performance is very good.
Who is Marius?
New Harry Potter.
Oh, he's the autistic wizard.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
A spectrum witch. He I think he's great in this, but the thing is there's so many shots that, like you say, there's a tight shot of somebody's face being about half of the screen and then bokeh out in the back, like a primish lens, and everything's so it's super intimate, very in your face. You can see every freckle on his face. And the singing is also very muted. The singing, not all the time, but a lot of the time, as much as it sounds big and operatic compared to the stage show, it's nothing compared to the stage
it is
show.
Absolutely
where
nothing.
Things are so big and like unapologetically operatic. Whereas in this, it seems like they almost feel like a little timid or a little bit embarrassed to be in a sung-through musical where there are little bits where they talk like this is rhythmic and then there's some singing.
Because it's trying to marry the form of the musical, which is the least human, least realistic, most performative caricature of human behavior that our species has ever invented with the gritty realism of like The Dark Knight. It's like it's like a gritty reboot of a musical.
It's got some Snyder moments. Why are you, tell us about the noise, Alex.
This week, Alex's Moan Corner. I mean...
Alex's screw just got turned.
Uh-oh, just one. That sounds like a new Brady segment. What the Alex Noise Corner?
You know what really turns my screw?
My jailer.
How hard it is to buy teeth nowadays.
Not good.
I want a hooker with hair.
Alex Jones teeth. Should sell teeth.
This movie is shot like 50% of the time trying to make the musical more intimate. kind of the way like Rent is shot. Like they really try to, like you said, they hone in. Like so many of the shots are just a person's face, and nobody can pull that off except Anne Hathaway. Russell Crowe's face filling up a screen as he's like. Chalk singing and
a little sharp. I mean, he's pretty miscast in this. We give Mr. Crow a hard time, but he was probably not the best casting decision for this.
So many people were miscast.
Like, I liked Russell Crowe. I don't know how I'm supposed to. I don't know what I'm supposed to believe about this, but having watched it now, I thought Russell Crowe. I ultimately bought into his performance and felt better about him.
Yeah.
Overall, more than Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman, I always fucking hated him in this movie, and I never liked him, and I always thought he was obnoxious, and I never, like, felt his plight. His face is so craggly.
He's
wet all the time.
He's very dirty and poor, and, you know, he's 24601. And that's the thing, too. You're not supposed to... The sort of shtick of Les Mis is it's supposed to be grandiose on this intimate level, which is like works so well as a musical and
as a stage musical.
Yeah. And like I said, 50% of the time it's shot so intimately. Like if they had gone full on like intimacy or full on like Titanic, like gigantic shots, I think it would have worked. But what's the song called? Hearing the People Sing Song. Like that that scene is probably my least favorite. My favorite in the stage show, but my least favorite in the film, because it's like if there's a riot in the street, like two guys are not gonna hop on a stagecoach, and it totally
works.
Almost
exactly
on
what
stage.
Happened in the real thing, though.
You mean in the actual riot that happened?
Yeah.
But there weren't hundreds of Parisian soldiers like hanging around.
No, they were. There were. They diverted the motorcade. Yeah. You can go read the Wikipedia or whatever about it. I had one thing on the filmmaking to bring up. So this is a. I just want to bring up this tweet, a little essay, by a friend of the show, Todd Vaziri. Does anyone want to introduce Todd to our listeners just so they understand who this guy is?
Todd's official title, I think he's a visual effects supervisor, but he works at Lucas. He makes Star Wars movies. He's very involved at a, a medium high level at like how the, I see there's so much to this, but basically Todd makes Star Wars and he thinks a lot about how movies stories get told.
Yeah, I've followed him on Twitter for a very long time, and he's someone I really look up to in terms of how he thinks about movies, and I've just learned a lot from hearing him talk about movies. If you want to follow him on Twitter,
because he doesn't think of it like people. I mean, just to ring Todd's bell for a minute here, people are always going, "Oh, CGI is ruining movies." It's like, no, CGI is not ruining movies. There's so much quote unquote CGI in movies you just didn't even notice. This was CGI?
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm about to go into the perfect example of this. But this is a couple of tweets I'm just going to read by Todd Vaziri. He's at T Vaziri on Twitter. So this is about the bat swarm effect in Batman Begins. So he says, "Batman Begins. I adore how unsexy and unglamorous the bat swarm was executed in VFX. The visual restraint on display is staggering. The bats swarming the asylum is choreographed as if real bats were on set, and each shot was a difficult one-off to get right. Other filmmakers might choose to make quote-unquote sexier shots, the camera riding alongside the bats in a single uninterrupted shot, turning corners, or shots where a bat stops, turns towards the camera, hisses, and then flies off. Nope, none of that here." Like, I think about that all the time. Of like, how many times have you seen that in a movie with expensive VFX where, like, literally the bat, like, looks into the camera and winks at you? And it totally takes you out of the story and the narrative. I actually thought that there were real bats in that Batman movie because of how it was shot. So I didn't even know that was a visual, CGI visual effect. But I was really reminded of that in this movie, where there was one of the big introductory scenes of Valjean, where he has stolen the candlesticks, and then he has his Who Am I, his very emotional song, and it's all shot with this really tight tracking shot of Hugh Jackman's face, and he's emoting like a motherfucker into the camera, and he's belting this song out even though he has trouble sort of sustaining the notes. And it's just meant to be this very earnest emotional expression, introduction to his character, and then he decides he's not going to be Valjean anymore, and he rips up his papers and he throws them into the wind, and the camera tracks up, and the little papers it literally follows one of the flutters into the city's skyline in the most obnoxious shot. So it's such whiplash, because you're like, alright, I'm like in the movie right up in this guy's face, like I felt uncomfortable, like I'm in his personal space as he has this personal crisis, and you're inescapable capable, and you're like, oh, like too close to the camera, like right up in the
action. But then the camera flies up into some kind of like a Hogwarts shot.
Yeah.
Where you'll see like, oh, here's the screen.
Like
the intro to
Harry Potter.
And it's like, that was kind of abrupt.
Yeah, it was literally like one of those shots where it was like, put on your 3D glasses now, and it blinks, and then like a watermelon flies into your face or something. So I was just like, what movie is this? Like, what am I watching here?
A movie made by a British guy who really likes musicals, who wanted to make a lot of money, and he succeeded. I mean, it's hard too, because the young who's I can never remember the French guy's name. The French, yeah, as opposed to the not French people in this movie. Marius's buddy, he was actually Fierro.
Oh yeah, how do you pronounce that?
I don't know.
I've never said it out loud.
I paused and rewind so many times trying to learn the pronunciation.
Is it Angelos?
I think it's
Angelos.
I think it's Angelos, but that does not sound French in my brain. And my French speaking wife is like, I don't know if that's a real name.
It's kind of a tongue twister.
Yeah, actually, Eponine or Victor Hugo made up that name, and it means goddess of horses or horse goddess or something, depending on how you translate it. That poor lady. She was in the 25th anniversary cast, and I think she's fantastic, despite being
who Eponine.
Yeah, yeah.
she's the standout talent in this one, I think, and she's. It's weird because when you watch, not to interrupt you, but like when you watch the stage version, certain performances really stand out. And in that one, I think the guy who does Valjean, I think he really does stand out. Very different from the way Colm Wilkinson does it. But the Eponine woman is like, she just pierces the room in the best possible way. She's amazing. What's her name? Samantha something. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Please. Samantha Barks. Who is so tightly corseted in this, it made my head a little bit spinny. That poor woman, she's filthy and she's wet, and she obviously can't breathe.
Why was everyone wet? Now I've seen it and I still don't understand.
Because they're poor.
Why? Does it represent the oppression of the capitalist system that they constantly can't, they can never get dry. You can never dry yourself of your status as a lower class person.
I actually have a theory about this because rain is in a lot of the lyrics, and there's lots of references to rain and you know, like drowning, and you can't do that in a stage show. So they really wanted it. And be like, yep, we're all wet and dirty and cold. And, oh God, it's so
well. Here we go. This is let's see, Les Misérables. Samantha Barks on freezing rain, tight corsets, and weight loss. Put it in notes. Okay, so I'm sorry, I totally cut you off. You were saying.
I don't remember. Oh, they just tried to pad the cast in a way that's like, all right, we've got Wolverine, we've got a Gladiator, we have a Mean Girl, but also, you know, we've got...
Wait, there was a Mean Girl?
Yeah, Amanda Seyfried, the bird. And
the bird lady.
Bird lady. Yeah, she's the one whose boobs can tell when it's raining.
Yeah, she was in this? Who was she?
She's
ESPN.
Cosette. Yeah.
Wolverine's adopted daughter.
She was Cosette?
Yeah. She's
wow.
So bad.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, it's awful. But I mean, she is also in Mamma Mia, actually. I don't know why they...
She seems nice.
She seems like a very nice lady, and she's very funny in Mean Girls. But they have another one of Marius's friends, both the red jacket guy.
He doesn't even go here.
Hair's full of secrets. Of course, that's full of secrets.
Is it Mean Girls?
Merlin, have you not seen Mean Girls?
You wouldn't understand.
Not since it came out.
You,
is that
you
the
go
lady
Glenn
I
Coco.
Like in? Is that Rachel Adams?
No. This is Lindsay Lohan, and it was written by Tina Fey.
That's what I'm thinking of, I think. Mean Girls. And they do the sexy Santa dance? Is that
yes,
movie?
Yes. Is that
that's a good movie. And Tina Fey. Tina Fey's in there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she wrote it. This is when people still liked her. But I feel like this is this a movie your daughter would like? Is she up to like
Mean Girls
level of movies?
No, we're not there yet. She can't, as I mentioned in text last night, she kept creeping in. She's never seen she's seen some parts of Les Mis, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of parts I just don't want her to see. I mean, I don't want her to see the teeth pulling. I don't really want her to see Master of the House. And I'm trying to figure out, to get her to go to
Merlin,
bed.
Merlin, I watched, I'm a grown-ass man, and I watched Master of the House, and I don't know what the fuck was going on.
It's horrifying.
What is happening?
Lots of...
What is that house? I literally don't understand what I watched.
Like, when they're filling out government forms, this is a place that does what? I think it's an inn. It's a kind of inn.
It is an inn that is... it's basically a whorehouse masquerading as an inn, and that is how he rips people off, in the novel, at least, I believe.
They get drunk, and he steals stuff, and he makes sausage out of
things. Yeah, yeah. And then he blackmails people because it's like, oh, you touched the dirty Santa, and yeah. And then...
What?
Wait, you don't remember? That's a key plot in the movie. They bring the Santa in on the street, and he gives like lap dances.
Oh my goodness, I think I might have blacked out.
I'm really surprised that Max didn't blatantly hate this. Did you make it through to the
end? I watched every minute of the movie.
Wow.
I was really interested in it.
I did not expect that.
So here's what I'm going to say about it. I don't think it was good. I don't recommend that people watch this. But I admire movies. You know, I think Merlin made the comparison to Watchmen, which I think is very, very apt. And I like movies that I really like when people have a vision and they go with it, because the easy mm-hmm. automatic thing to do in Hollywood at that scale with that kind of talent is to make the bland paste of a movie that everyone does, that is sort of familiar and you understand its contours and it soothes you every step of the way, going, you know where we are in the story, here's what comes next, here's what comes next, here's what you're looking at. And there's a kind of, I don't know, I like the bravery and the audacity of, like, doing something different with the form, especially in a mainstream, you know, like, you know, big budget, like, AAA film like this. And so I mm-hmm. like it. It's hard for me to say, like, well, this was, like, shit, because I feel like at least they tried something. Like, at least there was some vision, and they saw it through to its logical conclusion. And I don't think it was good, but I like that it exists. And, you know, I actually think there were some moments in this that were genuinely really arresting. So the little there's one shot that I absolutely just like fell out of my chair, was the tracking shot of the kid on the back of the cart where he's singing, and I was like, that is such a fucking moment. Like, God, that is just, it was just beautifully shot and lays out the whole scene of what's going on. Like, it was just an incredible movie moment. It was worth the whole movie for those, some of those little moments.
Are we getting, like, feedback that Max is too mean and now he's being really nice about this really, really bad movie? Like, there's nothing special about how this is shot. Like, Tom Hooper, like...
What are you talking about?
It's not...
Have you ever... No movie is shot like... It was fucking crazy, Alex. There was shaky cam, and it was verite, but then they did crazy cuts when Borat was singing. It was a nuts movie. Nothing made any sense. There's nothing is shot like this. It was like, it went from shaky cam to like on a track. It was crazy.
I feel like maybe I've just seen too many movies that have been adapted to musicals. Cause this is, that's my problem there. Nothing feels special about this movie in the way it is shot.
I've personally never seen anything shot like this.
Really?
I thought there were lots of little bits about it that were very distinctive, and knowing as very, very little as I do about how the segmentation of work on a cinema team goes, I mean, you know, you got to definitely give some points to the director, but I just want to say the visual team did a really nice job on this. Like, even some of the stuff of like, oh, you know, she's here, but she's, you know, in the background. And like, there's all kinds of nice little touches like that. And I imagine it was probably not as difficult to make as the movie The Revenant, but things like going into the sewers and stuff like that, I thought some of those shots were great. So I want to just get this out of the way. I really like this movie. It's not a good movie, but I really like this movie. And I do think it is a lot. This whole musical is a lot like Doctor Who, but like the whole way that this gets interpreted is very Doctor Who. This is very fan servicey, maybe not successfully, but they want you to feel the feels. And I think it does a good job of that. If you're open to feeling the feels, I think this movie's got that. It's not a nuanced piece of work about humanity. But by the time they get to the end and Wolverine's sighing in the chair and then the flags come out, no, it's heaven. Like, that gets me. I watched that three times last night.
No, I agree.
It's total emotional garbage, but I fucking love it.
It is.
And I think it works on that level.
No, I completely agree. It's like emotional junk food. I told you guys, I watched it twice in 24 hours and cried like four times.
You know what got me is when he's moving, when he's on the run, but you see that wherever he goes, he packs those candlesticks with him.
Yeah.
What a nice little touch. Did they invent that for the movie?
Yeah.
That's really nice.
I won't
particularly care, Max, but the priest, the guy who plays the priest, is the guy who I believe originated the role on stage in English. Who's like, I think, wouldn't you say Colin Wilkinson's like still like the most famous Valjean, Alex?
I think he was the 10th anniversary
I'm pretty sure he was in the 85 production.
Oh, you are correct, yes.
So that is a lot of people's, that is the canonical Valjean to a lot of people who grew up listening to the musicals. Very different style than Wolverine. Very different style. Man, he does the canonical Bring Him Home. Bring Him Home.
Yeah, it's almost like they wanted to, like you said, all of the versions are really operatic, and I don't understand, like, length was clearly not an issue with this. They added scenes.
Yeah, length it's got.
Yeah, why, I understand with Russell Crowe they needed to, you know, sort of handicap his role in a way that is, like, it's not as bad as people say, but I just... Hugh Jackman could handle it, I think, and it just feels stilted and I don't know.
Well, and like here's one that the fans bring up that I hadn't thought about very much until I listened to other versions, which is this is such a dumb small nerd point, but when you hear it on stage, something that's very distinctive about the singing style and the arrangements are the way notes are really drawn out and carried out and sometimes cross over. And it becomes, you know, bring him home. And like just these very, very long, like you can just feel the temperature in the room change, or like on something like On My Own, right? There's these songs that have these. And in this, a lot of people really hate the fact that those get cut so short to make it more like conversational. And again, like I don't want to make Max watch videos all night, but I keep coming back to that 25th anniversary performance of One Day More. It's my favorite one, but also it's got to be the biggest one. You get the feeling of what it would be like to be in a room with 250 people performing something at the same time. And by the time they get to the end and the camera pulls back, I get shivers every single time I watch it because of the hugeness of that sound. Just that the human voice at that scale is so overwhelming. They get near that at a few points, but it never feels like more than an octet of performing happening at a time. It doesn't have that hugeness, like that overwhelmingness. And while that might work for small scale humanity of, you know, headshots of Eddie Redmayne, but it doesn't give you the hugeness of really hearing the people sing.
Well, what are we doing here? Are we doing Tim Burton Batman, where it's sort of this like theatrical performative caricature where it's all about the story truth of like we're gonna have this artifice to tell you emotionally what it was like, or are we doing Christopher Nolan Batman where it's like the gritty reality and it's like the happening truth of like, no, this is how it is. And this movie is trying to do both, right?
Exactly,
it's like the
yeah.
crazy yeah. it's like the crazy Doctor Who musicality meets the we can see the individual flecks of diarrhea on Hugh Jackman's face when he's crawling through the sewer.
I think I just realized what bothers me most about how it's shot is because the so many of the lyrics are just kind of cut short, and all of the cuts in the film are they're what you expect.
It's like a music video.
Yeah, the only thing which is why I love Anne Hathaway's rendition so much is because
wait, you do?
Yes, I love it. I love
it. Do people
it.
Regard that as good?
It is different.
When she was singing, I literally was like, "Calm down, please."
I think it's stunning. It's not the way it should be sung. It's usually very stately, and part of what makes the performance, the famous performances of this are famous because there's a huge amount of composure to the singer. When you say, Alex, I mean,
yeah.
It's the fact that they're still holding it together amidst this lyric that is obviously about a life that's fallen apart and nothing can be done now. But and I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to see every performance done like that, but I think it's fucking amazing.
Well, and I have seen performances. I don't remember where it was. It was somewhere in Chicago where it was a slightly it was kind of a truncated version of this, and it was sung like the full like emotion of it, and it wasn't, you know, a West End version. It felt incredibly powerful and sad and upsetting. Like, and like Max said, this movie tries to have it both ways. Like, you see her being just, oh God, when she's being assaulted by that the sailor guy, and that's not how the other half of the film feels. Like the mm-hmm. like bloodiness, like the people get shot and there's no blood, but then you see literal blood just like flowing through the streets, and it's like, what are you trying to do here? What's happening?
Yeah, you're right. Like that's, you guys are both really hitting on something that like it's having trouble deciding which what's your phrase, Max? The story truth. Was that the phrase? Mm-hmm. Like, which story truth are we telling, and at what level, what scale are we going to tell this story? And it's, I think you end up getting a little bit of storytelling seasickness with those changes, because you're sort of like, oh, so now it's suddenly very real. Well, just a minute ago, his parole papers were flying around like butterflies. And like now, you know, so, yeah, that it is really disorienting in that way.
I was making fun of the Anne Hathaway song and how just fucking unhinged and weird and inhuman I felt that performance was in the writer's room. And Julia was like, and I was like, this is not how human beings act. Like, it was a fundamentally like inhuman, like she should be this sympathetic character. And the performance was so over the top and so schmaltzy that it actually robbed the character of like any sort of empathy. You could just like, I can't buy this. This is not how humans
behave. Becomes pathetic.
Yeah. It's like, please tone it down. Like there has mm-hmm. to be something, some humanity here for me to relate to, you know, beyond this like caricature. And Julia said to me, she's like, oh, you've clearly never hung out like at a cast party of like theater people, because people do they do act like that. And I was like, yeah, but fucking theater people, and they're the worst class of society. I mean, these people,
they're gonna be the first to go.
These people should be
under Max's
rounded
regime.
These people should be rounded up.
The Doctor Who fans and the theater people.
These people should be rounded up and put in camps. And they can all snot cry about
sure
it.
Joel Schumacher. Yeah. Joel Schumacher's a Jew, pretty sure.
The worst birthday I've ever had was when...
An essay by Alex Cox.
I was really, really great at... We were at a PAX video game convention, and I had kept my birthday relatively secret. But then one of the our writers found out, and then, of course, told all of our improv performers. And then I'm, you know, like handling all of these theater kids backstage, and they're singing like 10 different versions of Happy Birthday at once. And like, they're trying to lift me up and like put me in a chair, because half of them are Jewish, and they're like, you're half Jewish. And it was, oh God, it was, oh, what a nightmare. But then Max got me French fries. So
wait, can you say what my birthday surprise was, which was excellent?
It was very good. So we do this thing called Cards Live, which is Cards Against Humanity Live. What a great description. Where improv actors perform the cards, and so Max surprised me by getting the entire audience McDonald's French fries.
Everyone in the audience got a small McDonald's French fries, yes, for Alex's birthday.
It was delightful.
You're so thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. And then I ate them through the show, and it was great.
They're pretty soggy, and most of the audience did not want them. And Alex and I were like, good for us, more for us.
I'll have it.
I found that.
I will take your salty, soggy boys any day. These fries have been through a real Les Mis of moisture.
Merlin, I know that you have a lot of opinions about McDonald's, and I'm wondering, I know we share the opinion that the best time to go is to a corporate McDonald's at lunchtime or dinner time.
Yeah, when it's busy.
However, if you don't have that option, my opinion is to get your French fries and then wait like an hour and put them in the fridge and then eat them cold. Have you ever done this?
What? I've never tried that. Now yeah, I really want
do
to.
It. It's really great.
Oh my God, Max! Did I see that you tried? Did you try the new chicken thing from KFC?
Oh, the folding abomination.
Yeah.
The
one of my favorite DC characters.
Yeah, I ate it. I ate it before the eyes of God and men. I reached into the heavens themselves and slapped God in the face by eating this chicken taco shell.
I've made your creature into bread.
It was fine. I don't know. It was fine.
Yeah, I get real sleepy after I eat KFC, so I want to get like half. I want to get one and literally throw away half while I'm still in the store.
It was fine.
I really want to try it, though.
You know what it was? It was a chicken sandwich folded in on itself with no bun. Like, it's not that special. All it was it's a crispy chicken, and then there's like lettuce and cheese and tomato on the inside. That's great. That's a chicken sandwich. That's a great food that we all know and love.
But Alex, I want to try that. I really want to. I'm going to try that now. I've been trying to eat less horrible things in the afternoon for years now, and it's hard because sometimes that's just the thing that I want. I'm tempted to go back on the Atkins. I know it's not fashionable, but I feel so much better when I just eat shit tons of protein. And I'm not talking about paleo. I'm not talking about eating like, you know, cultured elk. I'm talking about just eating fucking bacon all day, and I feel so much better.
I have this really great diet where I don't eat anything throughout the day except I drink 2 cans of Diet Coke and then have a shit ton of food at night and then just
the sumo diet.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Eat a big meal right before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. Hi. Mm-hmm. We should probably start wrapping up. I have so much more to say about this, but I don't want to monopolize it. If one of our listeners out there, let's say, obviously you could go and watch this movie. It's an excellent, not very good movie that's very good. What, Alex, if you were going to point people in the Les Mis direction, where would you point people apart from this movie?
The 25th anniversary concert.
Done. Totally sure. Agreed.
Yeah.
And that one's really got the feels. That's got, like I said to you, it's got the, it's like if they told Stephen Moffat to make the musicaliest musical theater moment of all time. Because they bring out 4 Valjeans to sing Bring Him Home. They bring out like this whole like historical cast to sing One Day More, and then they bring out kids to sing Do You Hear the People Sing. It is available on iTunes. You can also listen to it. There is so much fucking Les Mis on iTunes music wise. You can go and stream many, many different things from Les Mis. I would, if you're a One Day More person like me, go back and listen to what's called Les Miserables. L'Integral, and go listen to the track called Demain or Tomorrow, and that's the original 1980 version of One Day More in French, which is pretty interesting to hear. But you can also buy the 25th anniversary concert, which is very well done, and most importantly, has excellent metadata. It's very easy to get straight to a song, unlike the film Les Miserables. Totally agree, 25th, boom. What about you, Max? If you wanted to get people started in the moisture-soaked world of Marxism that is known as Les Mis, where would you point people?
I recommend filling your pockets with stones and walking into the ocean.
Challenge. Challenge for next week falls to me.
Yes, it does.
Do you want to eat something, read something, make something, or potentially change something? Votes, please.
I want to do the thing that makes Max do Todoist or make something inconvenient.
Your challenge this week is to get the app Todoist. Yay! Subscribe to the premium service for like $25 a year.
Yay!
And I want you to go to a website.
To why?
Yay! Sorry, continue,
would you rather
Merlin.
Would you rather eat something?
No.
That'll teach you to be strong. You can go to a website called todotemplates.com. It'll be in show notes. You can go there and download a template. You click it, and it pushes it into your app, and you now have all kinds of different things you can do. It involves a lot of manly
things. I'm
going
to fucking make a barricade in the street and wave an OmniFocus flag through. You're going to have to drag me.
Listen,
I know you're going to come in with cannons and blast it away, but I'm making my stand.
That's right. You're going to flag your task. Wave the red flag. Red, the color of my task.
This is due by Friday with this is due by Friday.
I'm having some chips. Can you hear that? Is that going through on the mic?
Yeah, it's great. Okay. This is due by Friday with Merlin Mann, Alex. No, that's not what we do. This is.